I guess I'll repeat that again. Is there any community participation?
There are hands up.
Skip Newsom's here. Hello, everyone. Nice to see you.
Skip, is that, are you there, Skip?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes. Great. Go right ahead.
Yeah. No, that's okay. I just wanted to say hello to everyone. You asked if everybody was here, so no comments. Just glad to see everyone and glad things are going reasonable.
Okay, thank you.
Terry from Dufour.
Excuse me?
Terry Gardino from Dufour Bus Company.
Oh, good. Yes, we'll get to you in a second. Anybody, any other community comments?
Oh, yep. So, well, hold on. So Kendra, you have your hand up. Would you please unmute yourself?
Hello.
Hi,
how are you all? Hey, hi everybody. This is Kendra Rybacki. I'm the food service director at the school. I just wanted to take a few minutes and recognize some incredible employees at the school. I'm sure you all know that a few weeks ago we had a broken pipe in the kitchen that created a huge mess. Unfortunately, there was water from one end to the other. But I want to personally thank Candy Chafee and Jeff Gray for jumping in and staying all day and helping clean up the mess. And I want to thank Eric for jumping in and making phone calls and keeping us informed all day. I was so impressed how quickly Service Pros showed up to start the cleanup process. Eric, you are always trying to make everyone happy. It does not go unnoticed. I thank you for being so kind and understanding. I know it was a rough day. I feel horrible that it happened, but Megan Martin and Jana Bush, you're always, always looking out for us. I appreciate it. I know Candy and I appreciate you guys so much. Unfortunately, I came down with COVID and so did Candy, and Paula Subkloot jumped in and she put her work aside to help out so we could continue serving lunch and breakfast and prepare everything. And without Paula's help, I don't think we could have gotten through the day without having someone else help us. And Teresa, you are always asking what we need, what you can do for us. I appreciate you so much. You know, unfortunately, I've been in the school since it opened in 99, since it was built. And this is probably the fourth time we've had a pipe that's broken and caused this disaster. I'm not sure what happened, if they forgot to put heat in the kitchen or they thought what they put in there was enough, but obviously it's not. And I know Eric is working hard on trying to fix the problem. I pray it doesn't happen again while I'm there because I don't know if I could handle it again, but honestly, these few people have truly, I don't know how we would have gotten through it without you guys. I appreciate y'all so much. I really do.
That's great. It's just so nice
to hear good things. Yes. Thank you. Have a great night.
It's mutual, Kendra. That's for sure.
Thanks, Teresa.
Eric, does anybody else have their hand up?
Yeah. The next person with their hand up is Lisa. Please unmute yourself.
Yes. So I have two questions. The first is about the budget. I was here last month and there was discussion about taking money out of special education. Obviously, as a parent with a child who's in special education, that threw up some red flags for me. So I would like to definitely know more about what that means, taking money out of the special education budget, which, to be honest with you, I mean, my son's needs aren't even really technically met, and I haven't pushed that because we're in the middle of a pandemic right now. So I'm very happy with the way things are, but I would be very concerned if we were taking money away from special education. And then the other thing that I wanted to address was, the school committee seems to be very concerned with MCAS scores, and I know that that should be a concern of the school committee. However, we are in a pandemic, and I worry that the faculty will feel so much pressure to perform and make sure we have good MCAS scores, that it's going to reflect upon COVID safety. And so I want to make sure that the school committee is also equally concerned about COVID safety. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Eric, anyone else?
Yep. Rebecca Hamill, please unmute yourself.
Hi, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Rebecca Hamill. I am the preschool teacher at Farmington River. I'm also a member of the executive board of the Educators Association. And I have a letter that I would like to read to the school committee on behalf of the association. Dear members of the school committee, the staff at Farmington River have worked tirelessly over the course of the pandemic to keep our school open, safe, and most importantly, continue to educate our children while being sympathetic to their social emotional needs. This has not been an easy feat, as we are also all dealing with the effects of COVID within our own families. Whether it is due to contracting COVID, caring for a family member with COVID, having to quarantine due to exposure, or childcare issues, staff are burning through their sick time. I am requesting that the school committee allow staff to be given 5 to 10 additional sick days to make up for time lost. This will prevent staff members from having to go unpaid due to COVID-related absences. Currently, Central Berkshire, Lenox, Mount Greylock, and Southern Berkshire are all schools in the county that are offering this to their employees. Mm-hmm. Springfield, Northampton, Worcester, and Boston are some of the other schools across the state to offer this benefit as well. Staff members who have recently had children have exhausted their sick bank for their maternity leave. That, paired with childcare closures every time there is a positive case, has left some staff taking unpaid days now or close to having to take unpaid days. If we could afford staff members some extra days, that would avoid any unpaid time. Thank you for your consideration with this matter, from the Farmington River Education Association. Thank you.
That is all of the hands raised for the moment.
Carol, can someone address the question about the special ed?
I can address that really quickly. So
that would be great, because I just don't want there to be any confusion.
So, so Lisa, just so you're aware, the conversation was not about reducing any funds to special ed. It was about using more funds out of school choice, which would lower the amount in the school choice revolving fund. There was never any conversation about removing any funds for special ed.
Okay. All right, let's open our meeting. I need an approval of the minutes 4:10. Can I hear a motion, please?
I make a motion that we approve the minutes.
Second?
I second.
Teresa, can you do a roll call so that we can show, so we have a record of who is at this meeting, please?
Yep, sure. Jess Dringa?
Yes.
Carl Nett? Deb Vogel?
Yes.
Jennifer Hibbins?
Yes.
Arlene Talapko?
Yes.
Roger Kohler?
Yes.
Carol Lombardo?
Yes.
Did I miss anybody? Did I say you, Deb?
Yes, we got, yes, you did it.
And that should be it.
Okay, thank you. Is the representative, from Dufour with us?
Carol, can I just interject for just a second? It's for next month's agenda.
I have it on ours.
No. From what the teachers brought up, do you want me to put that on next month's agenda?
Mm-hmm. I already told you to.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Again, do we have a representative from Dufour?
Yes.
Don Frank.
Yes.
Don, can you walk us through what your company does in the event of one of your buses breaking down for one reason or another? We'd like to hear how you handle that.
the dispatcher from the yard which the bus is housed usually ends up calling me and giving me a description of the problems. And I will make a call from there as to whether or not the bus is out of service immediately, or if it is okay to continue in service, and we check it when it gets back to the shop.
And what do you do about the children on the bus when the bus is out of service?
They will stay in the bus, and if it's in a safe area, until another bus gets there and they can be transferred safely onto the other bus.
Okay. Committee, anybody have any questions for the gentleman? Carl?
Yeah, Carl. My question, can you hear me, Carol?
Yes.
Okay, so my question relates to when you have a safety event like smoke entering the bus, what do you do after the fact in terms of root cause corrective action to pin down what the cause of that event was and to ensure to the best in the best possible way that it doesn't ever repeat?
The bus is taken out of service immediately, brought back to the shop if it can, or it's housing the yard where it's housed, if it can make it there. If not, we'll go to the actual site and assess it or tow it or whatever needs to be done. And it's out of service until I myself or another one of my mechanics deems it safe to be driven.
But that wasn't really my question. My question is, do you get to a root cause understanding of what caused the event, like the event with smoke entering the school bus and the children having to be evacuated from the bus, understand what caused that and try to learn from that and then implement actions to preclude the possibility of that kind of event occurring again?
Can you specify which event? Because if we're talking about a bus that supposedly caught on fire in Sandersfield, it was never actually on fire. I actually spoke to Ralph Morrison this morning, who was responding fire chief, asked him what he viewed when he saw got there. He saw at when he got there, he saw no smoke, no flames or anything else. He used no retardants or anything. It was a simple case of overheating the brakes, which will smoke, but that's about all they do is they smoke. And then that's it. As long as you don't keep driving them, that's it. And I took that bus out of service that night. It drove back to the shop, to the yard where it's housed fine. I myself and another mechanic, between the two of us, have 70 years experience, checked it out the next day. That bus had a recent brand new brake job, and the driver just apparently rode the brakes too long down the hill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that an occurrence that happened often?
No, it does not.
Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you so much for appearing before us.
No problem.
Okay. The next thing on the agenda is the principal superintendent's monthly update.
Oh, there we go. Good evening, everybody.
Well,
a lot of things to cover. Our enrollment's still at 116, so no loss, no gain there. We've had a few cases that you've all been made aware of kids that test positive, whether at school or in school or out of school. So we've been keeping everybody informed on those. Everybody gets notified, gets posted on the district website. We did start a new testing program. The state changed things up a little bit. We took advantage of it. So every 2 weeks, staff are sent home with two rapid tests, and so are students. The ideal expectation is they will test to the evening prior to the next day of school and report any positive cases to the school nurse. We'll still continue to test symptomatic children, but we're not testing entire classrooms anymore. They found out that 98% statewide, 98% of those tests actually came back negative. So that's why they implemented this new program. So we'll be supplying parents and staff members with two rapid tests every 2 weeks. Moving on from that one, after school program restarted on Wednesday. I gave it a couple of days after the weekend just to test the waters, make sure we didn't have any additional positive kids pop up. So right now we have several clubs and intramurals going on along with our after-school program. There's Minecraft in grade 5 and 6 with Mr. Keller and Mrs. Flower. Really cool addition, Spanish clubs, going now with Mrs. Milky, 2 sessions, and that's servicing kids K-6. Art class with Ms. Cotullo, learning with Legos with Mrs. DeGrigley, intramurals with Mrs. Daly, knitting class with Mrs. Flower, and of course, band with Mr. Flower. On any given day, we have 60 to 70 students either participating in clubs or staying after for the after-school program. So we have a huge attendance, you know, high attendance rate and participation rate with that. So that's going really, really well. I started up my PAC meetings, Principal Advisory Committee meeting. Mr. Foster is on that committee, Mrs. Flower, Mrs. Ferrara for the paraprofessionals, and Mrs. Decker. The purpose of the Principal Advisory Committee meeting is to address smaller issues potentially that might need some attention or have some discussions on how to move forward on things like assemblies with COVID and not use valuable staff time where we could do maybe some small in-service during that time. So I really appreciate those folks volunteering to do that for me. And the last meeting, we talked about the gold standard for indoor recess. Sounds simple, but it's not. So we came up with an agreed procedure for that. We talked about reinstituting some assemblies. If we could do that safely, how would we do it, especially our character education assemblies? So that work is all in progress. We've had a few snow days, which is scary since we had a few COVID days in the beginning, but December 22nd, January 11th, and February 4th were snow days. Then, of course, we have January 18th as the broken pipe day. That coupled with, I believe, 5 was the COVID days in the beginning. So we're pushing the end of June. We're getting close to it. I did petition the commissioner for relief from those 5 days in the very beginning, since other school districts in the Commonwealth received relief in the forms of National Guard driving buses or the ability to go remote learning. I was denied all of that in the very beginning because we were the first school to have an issue. So they were kind of building the plane while they were flying it. Every time I ask about the status of that, I usually get, well, you don't want him to answer you now. So I think this was very early on, so I haven't talked to anybody in about 2 months, but now that we've used all these 4 days, considered snow days, whatever you want to call them, I think he'll be more inclined to hopefully grant those because we cannot go past the last day of June. If we continue to have snow days and he does not grant our requests, we're going to have to start looking at cutting short some of our vacation weeks, which I don't want to do. Because I know families and maybe staff had made plans, but if I'm being held to the 180-day requirement, I will have no other choice. But that's where we are with that. Testing program, cash calendars out, if you hadn't noticed or been hit up yet. The PTA has kicked off their annual cash calendar fundraiser, so keep an eye on that. I need to thank Eric Jesner, too, for writing a grant. I wrote a grant for staff appreciation, which we took care of breakfast and all that kind of stuff and lunch on our first days back. And then we had a nice holiday gathering. Eric took it upon himself to write a grant to receive healthy snacks. He can give you more details if you're interested in it. But we now have some health food. So if you have that burning desire to eat some kale, come on down. I'll pass, but we do have that, all kinds of stuff. So, Eric, thank you for doing that for our staff. It's phenomenal. That is all I have for you right now.
Any questions for Tom? Okay. let's move on. Vote on the current year's school calendar change. Tom, do you want to explain that?
Sure, I can explain that. Excuse me. One way to gain back a day is to take our March 18th professional development day and switch that to a half day of school. That will then count towards one of those days that we've had to miss. So this will take two things. It takes the school committee to vote to approve to allow the change to the calendar, and then it will require an MOU with the association to waive the contractual obligation of four PD days. So I think they're on board with it. It's just a matter of school committee saying, sure, Tom, go ahead and do it. But March 18th would go from a full PD day to a half a PD day.
Okay.
Which will then make up one of those days we missed.
Okay, can I have a motion to accept?
I'll make a motion to accept changing the March 18th to a half day from a full day.
Second, please.
I second.
Discussion? Okay. Teresa, can you do a roll call?
Yeah. Arlene Tolapko?
Yes.
Okay. Jen Hibbins?
Yes.
Deb Vogel?
Yes.
Roger Kohler?
Yes.
Jess Dranga?
Yes.
Carl Nett?
Yes.
And Carol Lombardo?
Yes.
Okay, unanimous.
Okay.
We'll talk with the association president. We'll put together an MOU, and I just have to sign it. They sign it. We're good to go.
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Eric, do you want to take over on the financial updates?
Sure. So, it wasn't on the agenda, but the one item I did want to bring up just to touch on, which Kendra brought up, was the frozen pipe in the kitchen, just to give everybody the chance to ask any questions about it. I have been in contact with our insurance company, putting together a list of everything that was damaged to try to get reimbursement for everything we can, and through the process of trying to overcome the obstacles that were put in our way due to that. So if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to explain what happened or provide as much information as you're interested in hearing.
Okay.
Carl, go ahead, please.
Carl?
Eric, is it true what was said earlier that this has happened three other times before?
I'm going to trust Kendra on that because this is the first time this has happened since I've been at the school. But I do know it's happened before. I just don't know the total number of times.
Okay. So assuming that it has happened before, this just begs for root cause corrective action to really understand what we can do to make sure that this never happens again.
Yes.
Okay.
I have been in touch with one of our HVAC companies, and I'm working on getting a time set up with one of their representatives to come and talk to us about putting a code compliant heating unit in the crawl space where that pipe did burst. And I have already been in touch with Larry Gould, who's the building inspector for the town of Otis, about that. And as soon as I get contacted from our HVAC company and set up the meeting, I'm going to have Larry be at the meeting as well, because he and I both have concerns about putting a heat source in an enclosed area like that. But again, it's supposed to be code compliant. So we're going to try to, research the best way to deal with that area.
Okay, thank you.
Roger?
Yeah, I was just wondering what type of pipe it was. Is it beneath the floor? Is it above?
It's a pipe that runs over the kitchen and in the crawl space over the kitchen.
So, yeah, there's no way he gets up there. It just froze. I remember it being very cold that weekend, but.
Yes. No, it was very cold that weekend. And the pipe that burst was a cold water pipe, which I don't think it would have mattered at that point. But it's a pipe that runs about maybe 2 inches from the concrete blocks of the wall. So it was just too much cold got transferred.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions with Eric? Okay.
Okay. So the next item is I need you guys to take a vote to authorize me to sign a four-year contract with KMS Actuaries, which is the OPEB audit I was speaking to you guys about at the last meeting. And now that I actually have the contract, I actually have specific numbers to give you. So with Siegel, who is our current provider, over the 4 years, the contract that is currently going to be ending in another year is for $26,000. With KMS, the 4 years with them is $12,100. So the difference over the 4 years is $13,900. And that's, of course, not assuming that once the Siegel contract would need to be renewed, that they're not going to go up in their cost.
But you said we still have one more year with them.
Correct. So, right. So next year will definitely be a year of overlap. And as we get to the budget, I will actually show you where I've entered that in on the budget.
Anybody have any discussion on that? Okay. I need a motion to accept allowing Eric to sign a four-year contract with KMS to perform the audit.
I'll make a motion to accept. It seems like we're saving quite a bit of money.
Second, please.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, Teresa.
Okay. Carl Nett.
Yes.
Arlene Talapko.
Yes.
Roger Kohler.
Yes.
Jess Dringa.
Yes.
Jen Hibbins?
Yes.
Deb Fogel?
Yes.
And Carol Lombardo?
Yes.
Okay, it's unanimous.
Okay, Eric?
Okay, next item is the expense report, which I sent out to the school committee on Friday. If there are specific questions about that on its own, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, everyone will be able to see... Actually, you won't be able to see the current expenses. So would you guys like me to pull that report up and go over it? Or do you want to focus more of our attention on the budget?
Anyone?
I think the budget.
Budget.
Okay.
Budget.
Okay, great. Budget. I'm happy to do that. And again, if anybody would like to see the expense report, please just send me an email and I'm happy to forward that out to everybody. So the budget. So give me a moment so I can... pull it up on my screen for everybody. Okay. Wonderful. Okay, so what I did to try to make this a little bit more clear for everybody is any line where there was a change, I highlighted in yellow so that it would stand out. So we could try to not focus as much on the information that did not change. But just so everybody is aware, I did spend a bunch of time updating the FY22 projected expenditures, since I did have an updated expense report. So I did go through and spend a lot of time. So that would be a little bit more or significantly more accurate than it was in for the last meeting. So again, as we get to the first highlighted line, school comm audit expenses, I did then include both OPEB audits in that line, which is why it did increase over the last presentation. And as we go a little bit further down, you'll see the teacher salary line was amended because I ended up moving some of that money into the school choice account and making that balanced.
Eric, I have a question on that.
Yes, please.
I noticed there still is a balance in school choice revolving. So why wouldn't you move more of that money to offset more of the teacher salaries? Because I noticed last year's budget used more of that money for the salaries.
Right, because last year we had a significantly higher balance in that account. And while I do believe we need to hold a balance in that account to make sure that we can deal with any unexpected expenditures, I do also understand that we don't want that account being excessive. And so the reason why we used so much money in our current year is to make sure that that account was not excessive. And so, I'll just run through the same math that I used last time. So that account right now is starting at about the beginning of the school year was about $491,000. And we're using $250,000 of it this year, which is going to bring the balance down to $241,000. Estimating we're going to get just about almost $97,000 in revenue this year, which will bring the balance to almost $338,000. So if we use the $138,000, it brings that balance down to $200,000, which again is where I feel is a safe amount for us to have. The difference, and from the conversation last time where there was the conversation about using an additional $100,000 from that account, what I did is that you'll see is when we get to the assessment worksheet, I used $100,000 out of E&D. So that we're still getting the effect of adding another $100,000 of revenue from our revolving accounts to offset the assessments. But what it's doing is it's allowing the money to stay in the school choice account as opposed to the E&D account. Because if something were to happen, the school committee does not need to make the towns aware of any needs or have to wait for the towns to do anything to access the school choice funds. So it allows this gives the school committee more flexibility in utilizing those funds. So I'm trying to achieve the same thing by using more money in the revolving accounts, but at the same time, giving the school committee the flexibility to do what it needs to do if a situation were to arise.
Well, Eric, I still think $200,000 seems like a large balance to keep in there. And I'm just wondering what sort of emergencies are you foreseeing that we might need to spend that with? Because I thought my understanding was that it was restricted to learning for all students. So I didn't feel like we could use it if, say, like the boiler goes. So what sort of emergencies are you thinking we might need to spend that $200,000 on?
Well, what I am still concerned about is a boiler type situation or another operational type thing like that, just like a large system failure that we can't predict. And you're right, if the boiler was to go, we could not use school choice funds to repair a boiler, but the school committee has the ability to vote to make an adjustment to the budget. So we could shift expenses from the general fund that are allowable to be used in the school choice fund to the school choice fund, and then freeing those funds up in the general fund to be used for whatever needed to be fixed.
Jennifer, does that answer your question?
It does. I'm just wondering what the other committee members think about keeping such a large balance in school choice.
Jen, I can say the years that I've been on, there's been quite a few times where, like that one year, the boiler, was it? I don't know if Tom's on. What's it, the boiler or something huge happened? And there's been times, you know, that other things have happened, and it's not as rare as you think it would be, unfortunately.
It was the boiler and the well pump.
Yeah. Yep.
Carl?
Yeah, I'm with Jennifer on this one. Eric, I understand exactly what you said, and I understand your logic for using the E&D versus the school choice, but I think we need to talk about E&D and school choice simultaneously, because I know we started the year in E&D at about, I think it was like 240K, somewhere thereabouts. And I think you just said that we'll start next year with 300 something. So we're sitting on 500K of taxpayer money I appreciate the fact that you want to move 100K from the school choice to pay for the teacher salaries, but that leaves us sitting on $400,000 of taxpayer money. If a boiler goes, people talk about that as being huge, but that isn't going to be more than $50,000. So I'm with Jennifer. I feel we're sitting on too much money, even with what you propose, Eric, respectfully.
Yeah, and I would almost want that money in the E&D account rather than the school choice, because you are limited in what you can use that school choice for. And teacher salaries is something that you could do it for. And like you said, you couldn't use boiler, repair the boiler with that money unless the school committee did some sort of rearranging and revoting of items. So
right,
is there a reason why that we wouldn't just use the E&D?
The E&D is more complicated to use. While it can be used for anything, you guys can't just vote to use E&D funds and then use those funds. It has to go to the towns. So what it does by leaving the funds in school choice is it gives the school committee the ability to react faster.
And when you say town, do you mean the select board or like a town vote?
Right. So how quickly do you, if the boiler goes and we have to shut school down, how quickly are the towns going to be able to pull together annual special town meetings? That's
Eric, I'm very sympathetic to the argument you're making. Like, that makes sense to me. I just think that, you know, we shouldn't. Then let's allocate more of the E&D money into this year and use it against the teacher salaries. So I'm not disagreeing with your philosophy that it might be better to hold the money in school choice versus E&D, but I think we have to look at the two of those together and say, are we withholding and sitting on an excessive amount of money? And it would also be helpful if we looked at the past to say, relative to these ominous events that people are indicating turn up in May, turn up, what's the worst one we've ever had and what's it cost us in a given year? It would help to bring some data to this discussion, I think.
I mean, I agree. I hear what you're saying, Carl, and I agree with you. I think maybe the school committee needs to decide what is the level of funds we want between the two accounts. Because you're right, which account it's in, we can make it work either way. But you're right, it's the total amount that the school committee should be in agreement upon. And just so you're aware, based on the budget the way it is right now, Carl, my recollection is the same as yours. We have about $240,000 in E&D. So if we take 100 out of that, that leaves that account with 140. And then if we use school choice the way we're doing it, that leaves 200,000 in that account. So that would leave us at the beginning of next school year with about $340,000 between the two accounts. And I agree with you, Carl. That's the number that the school committee needs to come into agreement upon.
And Eric, again, it's just, if we can get data, like I was chief technical officer for a boiler company. I know what boilers cost to replace. Okay, I agree. If a boiler goes out, you know, the expense is going to be somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000. But $300,000 is a boatload of money, guys.
Well, right, but that's just one aspect. If we have a high needs student move in, that's going to be $100,000. If we have a student that goes into residential placement, that's $200,000. Those are also concerns.
But those are all instances where we would have a special town meeting and we would get the money to pay for that. But to sit on this money and to just wonder if that's going to happen, I think is
never done that. We've never had a special town meeting in the past, and we have had numerous children that come in. And when you're looking at times to turn around, you're looking at weeks. And that is not something that's abnormal. That has happened numerous times. And we have been somewhat blessed in the past couple of years that, and probably the pandemic had something to do with it, that we have not. But this is the first time since I've been on that we have not had whether it's transportation that's costing us tons of money to transport kids to vocational schools or, you know, special needs or any, you know, residential schools. This is the first time that I have seen that so low in since I have been on the committee. So it's not anything. And then it seems that there's so much concern about money, which I totally understand. There may be, it's hard to wrap your head around the fact that you're going to spend $100,000 on one child, and that I'm concerned is going to cause a problem in a special town meeting. Where is that going to get passed? That how, you know, is that should that be allowed? So that's my concern.
Yeah, and I hear you. I absolutely do. But there's no way if there's a special needs student, you know, we have an obligation to this, you know, all the students. And if there's services that a new student needs, then that's just something that the towns are going to take care of that kid. Absolutely. I don't see that not passing.
But you are aware that if it goes to a special town meeting, your vote, Carl's vote, select board of the town's vote only matters equally to everyone else who shows up. So if that if it gets voted down, we may have to have a reduction in force and let people go and just deal with situations like that. So again, I'm happy to do whatever the school committee would like for me to do. Those are just the things that I'm concerned about.
Eric, I want to respond to what Jess said. Jess, I understand what you're saying. It would just be extremely helpful to me to see quantitative data from prior years in terms of these uh-ohs that pop up out of the blue that we can't anticipate. Over the history of the last several years, how much have those been each year? I mean, it doesn't make any difference to me whether the amount we're holding is lower than amounts we've held in the past. What matters to me is these unexpected things have come up. How much have they tallied up to so we get some database sense of how much we actually need to hold on to?
Yeah, what would the cost be for a boiler and a high need special ed student? Maybe it's $200,000, and I am mm-hmm. absolutely okay with $200,000 versus the $350,000 or whatever.
But how can you possibly know if in the course of a year if we don't get two students or three?
Right.
I mean, right. The possibility is there.
Tom, can you speak to that at all, Tom?
Me too.
As far as I know, over the past, I know just before the pandemic, I know there was a potential, maybe it was a little before my years get, I know we had a student that was a potential residential student.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened. I guess it was the pandemic, but that if I recall, that was over $100,000 a year.
Oh, it was well over. I believe that student became actually a ward of the state. That was actual residential placement, and that was closer to the 150-160 range, if I remember correctly. But it's not uncommon. It just takes somebody to choice if we're still open. But move into the district. It could be something as simple as a DCF placement. We just don't know. It could happen, it could not happen. But it's expensive. I mean, transportation, you're talking $300-$400 a day just to transport if they're going to a private school.
There was also, you know, in the past, there have been students who have needed full-time nursing staff with them. I remember a student that had, you know, full-time one-on-one, you know, with transportation. So it's not, I know it seems like it's an uncommon thing, but in the, you know, the years that my kids went to the school, it was not uncommon at all.
Yeah, we have tuition agreements for special education with both Lee and Great Barrington. But if it was going to be a residential placement for any reason, or even a day program. We have one student that's in a day program out by Springfield. The transportation is what really gets you too. So it may not happen. I'm sure we could put together, compile a historical view of that. I think we could do that. It's almost like the insurance policy, just in case something like that happens.
Mm-hmm. Tom, I think that would be a great thing to do. And let me kind of say something that I think brings together what Jess said with what Roger said about, you know, going to towns in a special meeting to get approval for more. If we look at the historical data and we see, like, I don't disagree with Carol that this stuff is not uncommon, that it's common. Let's look and see over the last several years, what's it typically averaged? And we plan for that in the money withhold. And then if something extraordinary comes up beyond that, which it could, I agree with Carol, we've got the argument to the town to say, hey, look, we held money based on historically what we thought we needed to plan for this. And this extraordinary things come up beyond that, that we need additional money for. I think that sort of makes the argument in a special meeting to the town. If we can say that, look, we look back historically and we sat on the money that it seemed was prudent from the prior data to sit on, and then something way out of the ordinary came in. And so I think that kind of reconciles the different views here. It would be a good strategy for us to take here.
It could. My only concern would be is how long does it take? Once mm-hmm. we realize we have the student, then once the town's have to schedule a special town meeting, incur those costs. How long does it take? Because it's not like I can sit back for 60 or 90 days and wait for the towns to appropriate the funds. I have a legal responsibility to have that child in a program.
Right. Can I say something?
Sure.
I agree. I'm sitting here thinking we're dealing with 100,000, maybe 150,000, but the trouble we'd have to go through to go to the town, get a town meeting, which takes maybe 30 or 60 days, you're then jeopardizing the education of a child, plus the other kinds of contingency that can occur. And I think with COVID and all the mental illnesses that we are going to be experiencing from children, I think we'd better have a backup, a cushion. Mm-hmm. Because I think we're going to have more problems than we've ever seen before as the years go on, because I think this stuff's going to have a kind of a long range problem. So I would like to, you know, be on the side of safety to have the funds available rather than panic. And then what do we do now and run to meetings and all this stuff? So I would like to vote on the side of having that cushion.
Okay, can we move on?
I just had a quick question on that, though. If you do get the special needs student who needs to go to, you know, a special out-of-district school that's at a high cost, don't we typically get billed for that tuition months down the line? Like, don't we have time to arrange for the payment? I don't know that it's always so urgent. It doesn't, like, when we review the warrants, stuff's, you know, from last quarter, tuition payments. So don't we have a bit more time on that?
It depends on the school.
Okay.
You are correct. There are some schools that don't bill as often, but generally I've found that the private schools tend to bill monthly.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Carol, I'd like to see what pre-pandemic numbers look like. I think that's reasonable. I'd also like, you know, I feel like if we go to a town meeting and the average town person, if you go and say, you know, I think we need to use $100,000 for a single student, I feel like it's going to be difficult to convince people that this is just something that we need to do. And that's my bigger concern. I sp- speak from my heart. I have two severely autistic nephews who were in placement, and it cost their town so much money. And I know there was so much pushback. So I understand it. And it's hard to swallow that much money. And I'm concerned that the town will say, that's ridiculous. We're not paying $100,000 for a single student. And that's a big concern.
There is one other source of funds that we haven't talked about here that represent a cushion, folks. And it's that each year in our budget, we estimate expenses. We take a pretty conservative approach to that, and we typically underrun the expenses we budgeted. It's not terribly evident from the data Eric presents here because we mix revolving funds and he's looking against the total budget. But if we look at what we estimate for expenses in each category historically, and then how at the end of the year do we come in terms of those expenses, in terms of actuals, Eric, I think you'd agree with me that in aggregate, we tend to underrun because we take a conservative approach in estimating those expenses, no?
I would agree with you, but I would also like to say that over my time here, I'm trying to reduce, do my best to get rid of all those overruns, which is also why the school choice account did get to the level it was at. And to resolve that was why I started out with using so much money from that account last year and why we're using again so much money from that account for this year, because I'm trying to prevent that from happening in the future.
Right. I understand that, Eric, but maybe we also look historically at relative to budgeted expenses in aggregate and take out the stuff with the revolving funds. How do we typically come in with actuals against those budgeted expenses and see just historically, like how conservative or pessimistic are we in aggregate? And I mention that because in the way you do the accounting here, that number is nowhere evident. You got to go through some gyrations to extract that number.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe we could do that too and take a look at that as well and factor that into this equation.
So my only concern with all of this is you guys need to approve this budget by the end of March. So that's just another thing we need to keep in mind in all this. And I don't know how often you guys would like to meet prior to then, but it's another part of the equation.
Understood.
Yeah, and just my last thoughts on this is I know in the last couple of years when I've had this discussion with the school committee, we thought $200,000 would be a nice cushion in E&D to hold on to for like a emergency case for a special ed student or a boiler break. And now we're saying that 338,000 is the number. So I'm more comfortable with hanging out around 200,000.
Well, but you're also talking about one account versus two accounts. So that's not an equal comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one was discussing the amount that was in school choice prior.
Right.
So, and again, remember we started this year with $491,000 in that account. If the point you're bringing up was brought up more often prior, that would not have gotten to that size. So I don't think that argument is fully fair.
Yeah, but we also didn't really know about the school choice as part of, you know, part of that cushion back then. So.
No, I think it's really helpful that you included the balances in those revolving accounts, because I was not aware of what the balances were prior to seeing those on the spreadsheet. So I feel like that's really helpful for transparency going forward, that because this is public funds, that everybody knows what's in those accounts.
Yeah. Again, I'm happy to provide any information you guys ask of me.
And to Jess's concern that if we have to go to a special meeting for something extraordinary, you know, the notion of getting the towns to pass that, we have to weigh that against the concern that, you know, even if the school committee approves a budget, it's still got to be voted on affirmatively by each town. And I just think mm-hmm. it's going to be hard for people to swallow the school sitting on that level of money that we're talking about, $330,000. That's got to go down hard, folks.
But you have to look at what the towns have in there. You know, everybody wants to have a cushion. You know, I'm sure if we look at Otis and Sandusfield, at what they have in there, you know, to make sure that they can pay for things. I think everybody, I mean, I think we all do it with our own personal lives as well.
Correct, Jess. But as I explained in the last meeting, there's a difference because the towns have known future expenses that they have to budget for. And because of that, they have to put money into stabilization funds and free cash, keep money in there because they have known future expenses beyond the current year. An example, Sandusfield has to pay for high speed internet. Okay. So they've built money in there to be able to pay for that when that bill comes due in the future. We aren't talking about that here. We're not talking about out year expenses that are known in advance that we have to plan for. We're talking about current or next year unanticipated expenses. It's a big difference. So as I said last time, I don't think it's too productive to sort of compare what towns do in this regard to what school districts do in this regard. I do think it would be meaningful to look at what other school districts do in this regard, because that would be truly apples to apples.
I'd also like to point out that the $340,000 would be 7% of next year's budget.
Understood.
Okay, so I'm going to move on if we want to keep going. So again, I'm not going to focus on any of the columns, any of the lines that are not highlighted, because these are numbers that haven't changed. But please feel free to chime in if you have a question about any of those numbers. So the next line is the equipment maintenance. The last budget presentation had this line at $20,000, which was an error by having an extra zero in there. So I not only reduced that down, but I did also reduce it down to 1,000 because, again, looking at, you know, this we never seem to have $2,000 in there. So again, just pulling some of that out.
Eric, was that due to the maintenance on the vans or anything, or
no? That line was just strictly it was just a typo. It was intended to be 2,000, and somehow I had an extra zero in there. And just from looking at this over and over again, sometimes those numbers don't stand out like they do until you guys see them. And then, yeah. And then, so health insurance, both health insurances, the employee and retiree. I did hear back from our rep. Let me rephrase. I reached out to the rep on Thursday to get an updated number so I could have something more accurate. She did not have a definitive number, but said I should use 2% because that's going to be more like what we're going to get. I did get an email back from her today saying that our actual rate increase is going to be 1.98%. So there will be an additional reduction of $123 to the budget for that 0.02%. But so these numbers did decrease based on the 2%. So again, since I didn't get the numbers with the 1.98 out to you, I just wanted to keep presenting what everybody saw. But I will have that updated for the public hearing.
Eric, can I ask you a quick question about the retiree health insurance?
Sure.
What is that? Do the retirees, do they get the same health insurance as the teachers, or?
Sort of, because once you're in Medicare.
Right.
Right. So it's actually a Medicare plan. It's like part C and D. So it gives our retirees the coverage that Medicare Part B doesn't cover. And then it's a prescription plan to go along with it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, of course. It's,
Still a little fuzzy, but thank you. Yeah.
But the school committee years ago voted to put into place a procedure to allow our retire. So if you've worked in our district for 10 years, when you retire, you get to stay on health insurance throughout your retirement for the school. So that just covers all the people that are retirees that are still on the plan.
It's like $1 million.
But again, if you have other questions, please feel free to call me and I'm happy to help answer any other questions you have. So for extraordinary maintenance, which again is going to be the capital cost, I haven't gotten back the quote from the contractor about this gym ceiling. So I'm still just at this point using the $50,000 quote I had from him a while ago. And then the other $14,000 is the quote I got to replace three exterior doors at the school and then to work on one of them to make it open and close more, to open and close without effort, which it is not doing at the moment.
Eric, I have a question. Yep. Oh, Carl, do you want to go first?
Who's up? Yeah, mine's real quick, Jen. Eric, I saw what you sent out on capital from your auditor, and I just wanted to ask you, in the 2020 audit report on page 19, they say a capital asset is more than 5K and more than 4 years of useful life. So I would appreciate if you could ask them why they say that in the 2020 audit report, and then they came back with a different answer to the question you asked them.
Thank you for beating me to that. I actually did ask that question and have a response to you. I emailed that auditor back. Sorry, give me a moment. And so I emailed the gentleman back and he said, I just double checked the FY20 audit work papers that we have. And I don't see a formal capital asset policy on the fixed asset questionnaire that gets completed during the audit. I see that noted as well. So I don't know why that is in the report, but they do not have a formal capital asset policy from the school committee. So that is something that the school committee should probably work on putting together. That way it becomes a non-issue going forward. And that way there's clear definition and then it makes it easier because we just have a policy to follow.
All right. Well, I think we should tend to that at some point so that we're all really clear on that. And it's just, you know, if we don't have a formal policy, I don't know why they would have stated that in the 2020 audit on page 19. So you might want to tweak them on that a little bit as well.
Well, oh no, yeah. Well, I mean, I will make sure that it is addressed in the FY21 audit, and whatever's in there is correctly matches our policies.
Okay, thank you.
So one thing about this line.
Wait a second, Roger. Jennifer was before you.
Jennifer. My question is also about the capital expenditures and the threshold for defining them. And right above here, you have under new equipment, $12,000, including the carpet. And I thought that you were going to move that at the last meeting. I thought you talked about moving that to a capital expenditure. I did look too at our regional district agreement, which is very broad in how it defines capital expenditures, which is also probably a reason why we need to adopt a policy. Mm-hmm. But from what I read there, you know, it's pretty much any sort of furnishings, remodeling and adding to buildings, repairs and improvements to buildings, related premises, including furnishings, other costs incidental to placing school buildings in operating condition. So I'm just wondering if you would move the new equipment to capital expenditures.
Well, so by that definition, the carpet cleaner wouldn't fall under that because it's not a furnishing and
It's not carpet.
It's the cleaner. So it shampoos the carpets and extracts the moisture, and which gets done every single summer to every carpet in the school.
But it is above that the total is above that $10,000 threshold, though.
Right, but it's not about how much you spend in a total year. It's about individual items or a grouping of items. So, like in the definition sent out by one of our auditors, like for instance, if we were buying $12,000 worth of Chromebooks, whereas each individual Chromebook is not worth the total. 12,000 is worth significantly less than the limit because it's being done as one purchase. The total purchase then becomes a capital cost. But whereas if we're talking about an individual carpet cleaner, that's $6,200 and everything else that equals the rest of the 12,000, since it's not even being done together and it's scattered stuff, that wouldn't fulfill that definition. But again, depending upon where we want our definition to be, that carpet cleaner would potentially be moved on its own, depending upon what our limit is.
Eric, I agree with what you've just said. I have a proposal for you, okay? Until the school committee adopts a formal policy relative to what is and isn't capital, I would suggest we use what was in the 2020 audit report until we have otherwise, because that's documented. It's in the audit report. And I don't think we should deviate from that until and when the school committee puts in place a policy that's contrary to that.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but again, since it's not actually based on a policy, but again, it's not my call. It's up to, you know, I'm happy to do what the school committee would like. I'm happy to make adjustments with whatever the school committee would like me to adjust.
Understood.
Any other questions about that before I move on?
Yeah, just one question. Will we have I guess it's unknown, but we're looking for an estimate for that gym ceiling. I know that's something that needs to be done next year, or I think we're all hoping it's done next year. Will we have a better estimate or bid by the time the budget is going to be passed? Because $50,000 2 years ago is really like $55,000 or even more right now. So,
right. So I'm going to reach out to the contractor I've been in touch with. But the other thing to keep in mind is because it's over $10,000, when we get to the point of if that money is approved in the budget, when we're at the point where we're getting close to having the work done, I am required to get at least three quotes. If the quote that I get back now is over $50,000, I'm going to be required to put it out to bid. So even no matter what I get, there's still a chance that it could come in. I mean, my expectation is this is not going to be any higher, right? Because we got one quote in. The question becomes hopefully it gets in lower. But again, if that quote comes in and it's over 50,000, it's going to have to go out to bid. So it's even no matter what I get, it's going to be hard to exactly pinpoint where it's going to be. But yes, I agree with you. Using a quote that old is potentially dangerous. Right. Yes.
Okay.
So the next highlighted line is special needs out of district public tuition. This increased by $20,000 because we actually just got in two additional students since our last meeting. So that had to be adjusted for those two students. I did also get for the next on the school choice tuitions, I got our school choice reports from the Department of Education, and there was one additional student added. So this was increased by one, and it was increased for $5,000 for that one student. And then circuit breaker reimbursement was adjusted based on the revenue we are receiving this year, which will be able to offset the budget for next year. And then all of that leaves us with a total of $4,820,577, which is an increase of 1.42%.
Over what?
Over last year's budget.
the approved budget for last year.
So what I tried to do is making things equal, because the $100,000 for the paving project was not in that four. That's what made the budget the 4,653,000. So to try to make an apples to apples comparison, I moved that money right up here, as you can see, in extraordinary maintenance, so that we could be comparing actuals, because I didn't want to compare two different numbers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. So I'll get into this more when we go over to the assessment sheet, because that'll give you a better breakdown of all of this information. So again, as you can see, the capital expense project is there. Unfortunately, right now, the Department of Labor Services has not yet released FY21 equalized valuation numbers. So I'm still using 2020 equalized valuation numbers, because that's the most current that I have for the split up of the capital expense budget. And then, as you can see down here, this is where we have the curriculum. This is all the school choice expenses equaling the $138,000. And then underneath, I have the comparison, because this was something Carl asked for last year. I adding up all of the teacher expenses. So it's the teacher expenses from the general fund, the school choice fund, and subbing. So you can see this comparison to where the budget for last year. And then this is what I'm predicting the beginning balances will be for those revolving accounts. And then,
Eric.
Yep.
Before you leave this page, you moved a little too quick for me.
Oh, sure.
Go back up to where it talks about enrollment, you know, for the purposes of doing the
That's not on this page. That's on the assessment worksheet.
Oh, okay. So, all right. I saw the line item up here. Okay. I'll wait until then. Thank you.
Okay. Of course. And then lastly, so after the revolving balances, I didn't want to include excess and deficiency in revolving because it's a slightly different type of account. So yeah, it's $241,029. That's the certified amount that we'll be starting next year with. So next, sorry, give me a moment. I got to move everything around to get to the right spot. Get rid of that. And then, okay, so.
Did you get a new computer, Eric?
Sorry?
Did you get a new computer?
I'm using my wife's computer, because at home I have a Chromebook and it does not work well for this. So I'm using her real computer. So it's.
Got it. It looks different. That's all.
Okay, actually, this is not the one I wanted to start with, because that would not be fair. No. Oh, no. Where is it? Sorry, give me a moment. Doesn't look like it opened. This is what I wanted to see. Yes. Okay. So I have two different assessment calculations. The first one is going to be right here. And what this is doing is it's using the actual, what we've actually utilized in E&D against the budget. So I want it to write so that we're comparing what is actually being done this year to the budget for next year. So again, we're seeing the 1.42% increase. We're going to back out transportation. We're going to back out the capital expenses, which leaves us with the 4.3 million. Chapter 70 at this point is just over 612,000. The $100,000 of E&D, $1,000 for interest on our bank accounts, $1,000 for miscellaneous other stuff that happens to come in. That leaves us with a balance of almost 3.6 million. Then we have our required local contribution from the Department of Labor. And then, so this year, OTIS was increased to 1.37 million, which was an increase of 260,000. And Sandusfield was increased to 861,000, which was an increase over last year of just over 41,000. So we back that amount out, which leaves us with just with over 3.636 million to assess. And then we use our enrollment percentages. And sorry, Carl, I'll actually spin down here so everybody can see those. So again, 2019 dropped off. So we're left with 2020, 2021, and 2022, which is our current year from our October SIMS. So again, the combined totals, and then we do our percentages. So it leaves OTIS with 56.3 and Sandusfield with 43.7. And as we can see, if we get up here, again, OTIS is being reduced again and Sandusfield is increasing. And again, this is the trend that I was been explaining for a while that's happening because those older years have strongly helped out Sandusfield. And as we're getting more Sandusfield students in the school, it's getting closer to equal.
Eric, I got a couple things. I want to make the school committee aware of something. So the minimum contribution here, okay, that came into effect in the state in like 2007. And I want everybody make sure everybody understands here that the regional district agreement that was put in place in 1992 and has never been adjusted, amended since then, specifies a completely different procedure, which of course doesn't include the minimum required local contribution. It just talks about enrollments and equalized valuation. In other words, what Eric's doing here is consistent with state laws that exist today where the commissioner dictates a required minimum contribution, and then you look at the amount needed beyond that, and then you split that up by the enrollment splits and equalized valuation. The regional district agreement doesn't say that. The regional district agreement says you split up the total money needed by the enrollments and equalized valuations. And of course, there's no mention of this required minimum contribution coming off the top in that calculation because it didn't exist in the time. So I just wanted to make everybody aware of the fact the way we're doing things today is not at all consistent with what's specified in the regional district agreement. And furthermore, it says in enrollment, you'll use K through 12 enrollment to determine that split. And of course, we consider PK through 12 in this split. And I just think it's not a good thing that what we're doing today is so completely out of whack with what's written into the RDA, which has never been amended. And then I got one other thing, Eric, is in the enrollment numbers we use, why would vocational students, for which the towns are responsible for paying both tuition and transportation directly, why would they be counted in that enrollment calculation? And the RDA provides absolutely no clarification about what enrollment actually means. And I contacted DESE, both Michelle Griffin and Christine Lynch, and they've got to do homework to get back to me in terms of what really does enrollment mean here. I just wanted to mention this to folks and that it's very murky, actually. And it's, of course, it has a big difference in the numbers that are computed. So anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
So I'm curious why you think vocational numbers are included in this enrollment for 2022.
They're not?
No. Because I can't include them because they're not our students.
Okay, so it's good. I'm glad to hear that the vocational numbers aren't included. There's a database I came across that shows for our district, you know, how many students we have in the vocational category, how many choice out, where they go to and all that stuff. I'll send that along to you. But I thought from those numbers that we were actually counting the vocational enrollments as we did these.
I will double check it again tomorrow. But if Look, I when we switched over to the towns paying for vocational students, I stopped using them. And if I hadn't, it would actually be benefiting Sandusfield more right now, because Otis has three vocational students and Sandusfield only has one. But I will double check that in the morning.
I'm gonna send you this link to this database on the DESE site. We'll take a look at it and understand what it is, because there's a couple other questions I have about it. Like it's listing in both the cases Sandusfield and Otis that we've got students who are residents who are paying tuition to Farmington River, and I couldn't figure out what that was, Eric.
The only thing that could potentially be would be pre-K.
Pre-K, but we stopped that, right? We stopped tuition.
Yeah,
we
have. Yep. Okay. Ever since COVID's been an issue, we have not received any pre-K tuition revenue.
Okay, well, I'll send this to you, and we'll try and make sense of it together.
Yep, sounds good. Okay, so I'm going to pick back up here. So again, the balance to be assessed was the 1.366 million. And then based on, again, enrollment percentages, that is how it gets allocated. Then we're going to shift down to our transportation number from above, which is the 444,000. Right now, the state's saying we're going to get $227,000, which leaves a balance of $218,000. And then again, assess those at the same percentage rates. So then we get to step seven, where it adds up the transportation and operational. And then we go to step eight, where our capital is. And again, I'm going to keep checking this, because if we get if the DLS updates the equalized valuations prior at any point prior to you guys passing the budget, I will definitely update that information so that we can make that as accurate as possible. So then if we add all those steps together, we can see that the assessment for Otis is 2,303,494, and in Sandusfield 1,575,993, which is reflective of a 15.83 and an 8.46% increase. But what I wanted to do as well is, since this year we had all that extra E&D dollars going to the towns, I wanted to also do the same worksheet, except view it as it was that was passed by the school committee last year, so before that money got added in, so that we can see an apples to apples comparison of what the increases to the towns actually look like before that extra, before that excess money was then returned. So again, keeping the current year assessment, the FEF 23 assessments the same, but taking the 22 assessments back to where they were originally, you can see that the increases then change to 1.91 for Otis and a negative 4.64 for Sandusfield. So again, it's hard to say which one's more real, because they're both real numbers. It's just different perspectives of looking at the same numbers.
Understood.
Are there any other questions?
Eric?
Yes.
How would that appear on the town warrants when we go to the town meeting? It would be like, this year's would be compared to what was approved last year?
I do not know how the towns would make their warrants up. I cannot control that. All I can do is present our information to the towns.
Are there any other questions? Eric, are you at the end?
Nope.
Okay.
So the one other thing we needed to talk about is in related to the budget, which is we need to come up with a date for the public hearing. I need to switch pieces of paper. just so I can keep all my dates straight for all of you. So what we've done in the past is we've always tried to avoid Mondays because we know that a lot of towns have meetings on Mondays. So Wednesdays tend to, I feel like, have been a really good day to do this because we want to make sure that select boards and finance committees can join us for this meeting. I already reached out to the Berkshire Eagle about what their dates are as far as notification versus publication for legal notices. As of right now, if you guys said, okay, get this for as quickly as we possibly could, the earliest date we could have the meeting would be February 17th, which is a Thursday. It's also the Thursday prior to school vacation. I don't know how the school committee feels about, having the meeting during school break. I could see positives and benefits to that. The other option is because of the way the dates flow. We do also have the week after school vacation that we can have the meeting, which is the week is still a week before the school committee meeting. The only thing I will say is if out of that meeting, the school committee would like for me to make changes, it's definitely going to truncate the amount of time I have. Because let's say we have that meeting on Wednesday night. In order for me to get a revised budget to you on Friday, that just kind of really truncates that schedule. I would be willing to do everything I possibly could to do that, but I just want that to be a thought in the process. So I need to know from you guys when you would like that meeting to be. I mean, I think maybe it's easiest to decide what day of the week first, and then we can figure out which day of the month.
Okay, how does everyone feel about a Thursday? One at a time, please. Deb, were you saying something?
Thursday is a good day.
Jennifer?
Of which week?
Sooner than later. Or are we talking about the 24th? Eric?
So again, we can, the earliest date we could possibly have this meeting is Thursday the 17th. But okay. Please, Jennifer, go ahead.
I have another conflict on Thursday, and it is a Sandusfield meeting where other town officials might be there. It's for planning the Memorial Day parade on that 17th. And then I'd rather not do it during the February vacation because I know that at least one of our select board members is going to be away on vacation during that week. So my preference would be Wednesday, March 2nd.
How does everybody know about that?
I'm fine with what Jennifer said, but Eric, I want to make you aware of the fact that Sandusfield has a special town meeting coming up with numerous warrant items. I can't remember whether it's February 23rd or 24th. Jen, Roger, 26. You guys remember the date?
It's Saturday the 26th.
So I just wanted to, So I just wanted to make sure you are aware of that. And my guess is that they would prefer that this hearing happens after that special town meeting. I don't know that for a fact, but that's my educated guess.
And when was the town meeting?
Saturday, February 26th.
So in other words, we're looking at March 2nd now.
Is anybody opposed to March 2nd?
No, March 2nd is actually really good for me compared to all the other dates.
Works for me too.
With no opposition, let's go with March 2nd.
Good.
Great.
Question. Because I haven't been through this before, can you somebody explain to me what the school committee has to do relative to approvals or votes or whatever to sort of say, we agree that this proposed budget should be presented in this special meeting that's going to be held, this hearing? I'm a little confused about what does it take to get to agreement on what budget should be presented to the towns in this special meeting where they get to give us their input on the budget.
So I guess I would suppose that if there's any changes the school committee would like me to make, I need a consensus on those changes. I mean, I guess I don't need a vote, right? Because it's not an approved budget or anything. I just need to know that this is any changes that the school committee would like me to make to the budget. And I don't know the best way to achieve that ends.
Okay, well, that answers my question, Eric. But there was a couple of significant issues we discussed today where it's not clear we have consensus, the biggest one being how much money should we propose to sit on. I think another one is what should we count as capital, okay, versus things that aren't capital. I think that's much more minor. I think the big one is the first one I mentioned, but I'm kind of curious as to how we get to a resolution on that issue in particular.
Can I make a suggestion? I would like to suggest that the school committee meets, let's say, the last Monday in February, you know, a meeting amongst ourselves to straighten out, you know, any things that needs to be changed before we get to the budget meeting on the 2nd. How do you feel about that?
It can't be on the 28th because I am required to have the budget posted for 48 hours prior to the notice. The budget needs to be, according to the MGL, the budget needs to be like in the superintendent's office, but of course, or any other location that the school committee decides. But because of not allowing people in the school, I was going to have it posted on the website and then in the public notice for the hearing, tell people that they can go to the school's website to access that information. So that would need to be on the website on the 28th. So I would say that if the school committee wants changes to be, if you guys want to have another meeting, we should do it prior to then.
Okay. Well, then how about either the 23rd or the 24th?
I have a meeting on the 24th, but we can make changes after the hearing. Anyway, right, Eric?
Yes, but to Carl's point, if there were these changes made before that meeting and these were concerns from people, it may alleviate some of the concerns people have insofar as evaluating the budget that's being presented on your behalf.
And I think that needs to be a public meeting also.
Absolutely.
Can we just go back and figure out on the 3rd, what time are we looking at on the 3rd? Is that a 7 the o'clock?
Second.
No,
the 2nd.
Second. So are we doing a 7 o'clock on that one? Or?
Well, yes, we can open it up to the, you know, we'll just conduct a regular school committee meeting.
Okay.
Isn't that just for you, Eric, or no?
I mean, it's a school committee meeting. I did a lot more research into it. It is a school committee meeting, but it'll just be this one topic. This is, again,
so I open the meeting and then open the hearing, close the hearing, close the meeting.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Got it.
I mean, of course, you guys could opt to have a regular meeting during that time. I just assumed you'd rather not.
Okay. So, having a special meeting for just the school committee. I mean, it can be public, but we need another one before we get to the budget.
Didn't we say the 23rd was working?
Well, I thought Roger said that wasn't good for him.
The 22nd and 24th, I can't, but the 23rd might be okay. I know that's the vacation week, but that's fine.
Does anybody else have any objections to the 23rd? Okay, so then we'll make it the 23rd.
7 o'clock?
7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Now, other than looking into some of the costs for like big issues with the boiler, looking into some of the historicals on things that went wrong, is there other information that you guys would like for us to compile to help facilitate that conversation?
Eric, I would like you to look at any special needs tuition and transportation also, please. Pre-pandemic.
But that came up beyond the budget.
Okay.
Correct?
I'm simply looking at numbers because in the past we had always held enough money knowing that we've been surprised in the past with what it actually costs at times.
Okay. And Eric, I'm not sure if you said this, but again, I'd like to understand how our budgeted expenses compare to our actual expenses over the last several years.
Okay. Any other concerns?
Eric, I would just like to thank you for putting all of those numbers together.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks.
No problem. Happy to.
It was a good discussion, Eric.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I need a motion to adjourn.
Oh, Carol, can you hang on 1 minute? Just a housekeeping thing, very brief. I really like what Teresa's doing now with the abbreviated minutes. I think that makes it a much more manageable process, but I really think we should be posting a link to the recording on the website with the minutes so that people that want to delve into the details can listen to the audio recording. So I'd like the committee to consider whether, you know, they have any issue with us. I mean, anybody can request a recording and we have to give it to them. I just think we should actually post a link to the recording with the minutes, given that we've gone to these very abbreviated minutes that just hit the highlights.
Well, I'm to start that out though, I'll talk to Lori and ask her our tech person, just to see if she sees any issues as far as the file sizes and all that kind of stuff, just to help add to that conversation.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. All right, I need a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion. Okay, I second it.
Okay, Teresa.
Okay, Roger?
Yes.
Jess?
Yes.
Jen?
Yes.
Who am I missing? Arlene?
Yes.
Carl?
Yes.
Deb?
Yes.
And Carol?
Yes. Okay, thank you all. And I guess we see you on
the 3rd.
On the 23rd. On the 23rd.
Yes, 23rd.
In February, right.
We'll send out the link and we'll get that meeting underway before the budget meeting on Wednesday the 2nd. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Be safe out there.
Bye.